coming up on Thunder Pop.
This is episode 128 of the Thunder Pop podcast. It's also our season finale of season 5. We're going to wrap up a little earlier this year than we normally do, because I'm hoping that we can start back a little earlier than we normally do as well. Normally, this would overlap right in the middle of busy summer movie season, so we would be turning out podcasts left and right for all the movies that would be coming out. But since it's not the usual summer movie season, I decided, why don't we take a break now? I can go work on other content for the web, for the social media, do some videos, and then hopefully movies are back in the late summer or early fall. Then we can hit the ground running a little earlier than we, because normally I'll take off about August and come back in very beginning of October, right before the holiday movies come out. But I'm going to do it a little different this year, hoping that maybe we get a late summer movie season. Joining me for the season finale, the one and only, the boy wonder, Johnny Lightfoot.
Hello, hello.
Sitting on the computer screen right in front of me here in the Thunder Pop Dome. I'm Stephen Presley. We're today going to talk. It was some big news. This is great. I love it that we got some big news. So it gave us something really to end the to do this show, some good content for this show. Michael Keaton. Now, not official, because a lot of people have reported it as if it's already going to happen, but it's not official from what I understand. But Michael Keaton, really good chance. It's trending in a good direction that Michael Keaton will be returning to DC Cinema Universe.
I'm Batman.
Probably in the role of Batman. So we're going to talk about that in this episode. Michael Keaton coming back as Batman? Question mark? Holy cow. Well, we're going to talk about that in this episode. And then also, we'll open the show with our usual Thunder Take. Alamo Drafthouse, the very popular and very successful, mostly independently owned and ran movie theater. Alamo Drafthouse, there's reports that they're trying to open back up, or they're saying that they're aiming for a test open kind of sorts in July. Of course, the news changes every day, so that could be on today and off tomorrow. But as of today's reporting, Alamo Drafthouse going to try to open in small, like just a few locations in July, kind of test some things out and see if they can get back up and running next month, which is almost this month. We'll have our usual agree or disagree, thoughts and advice. We're going to end it strong. We're going to end it fun. We're going to end it big right after this.
Wait till they get a load of me.
I'm Batman.
Okay, I lied.
Thunder Pop. Thunder Pop. Oh, Thunder Pop.
Yeah, here we are. Wrapping up season 5 of the Thunder Pop podcast. It's our last episode. We're wrapping early, hoping to get back early to hit the ground running on maybe a late summer movie season. And then if that doesn't happen, then we'll keep talking about streaming shows and video on demand. So in our Thunder Take, I'm going to talk to Johnny. There are reports that Alamo Drafthouse has said that they are going to try. They're working towards reopening in July. Limited, not all the locations, some locations. They said they're going to be doing I guess it's kind of a, it's a thermometer, but it's not the thermometer that people are used to using when they go to the doctor to check temperatures, but it's more of a skin temperature check that people would go through when they go into the movie theater. If you hit 101 you wouldn't be allowed in for a movie. And that includes employees and staff if you're running a fever. So anyway, they're talking about reopening. What do you think? Do you think they're going to make it, or do you think it's still pretty a big iffy question mark?
I think out of all of the theaters, at least here, I do think Alamo will definitely take the safety most seriously, and I think they may have the greatest success when it comes to reopening,
right?
Because it does sound like they're going through pretty strict protocols. I mean, in terms of mandatory masks, if you don't have a mask, they'll provide it. Mm-hmm. Basically, you have to stay seated after the movie is over and exit, you know, one row at a time, starting at the front.
That's a great idea.
Servers are going to be masks, cleaning everything all the time. So, I mean, I think if anybody's going to be able to do it successfully, it will be Alamo. And I know they're used to doing those kind of, you know, eclectic older movie screenings.
Right.
So it gives them an opportunity, and they already have a fan base for that, because I know a lot of people that actually go to more of those screenings than like new movies.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird to me, but I know a lot of people, they just like seeing movies they love in the theater again. So I think they'll have great success with that. And I think doing that first will put a lot of people at ease going to Draft House. Now, I know a big question is mask required except when you eat. And that's like the biggest thing with Alamo, is you can eat food while watching a movie.
Yeah. So how's that? How does that work?
I'm still I kind of want to see, like, give it a week or two, you know, when they do reopen. And I want to see what, like, how are they seating people to where you can eat comfortably and not feel like, you know, somebody's too close to you or whatever. Because
mm-hmm.
there are those people that just literally snack on corn the whole movie. So, like, mm-hmm. masks are never going to be up for those type of folks.
Yeah.
Me, I can pound a burger in like 5 minutes. So, and then it's mask up.
Same here. I mean, I eat pretty fast. I mean, I could also graze on a snack like chips and eat them mm-hmm. all, you know, eat on the same bag of chips. Of course, a large bag of chips, but I could eat the same bag of chips all day. But when it comes to something like a burger, I'm like you, or a pizza, I could shove it down my mouth pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be so messy looking the way I eat that people really will want to social distance as much as possible from the scene of me eating food. But here's the thing. They've said that they're going to be able. Now, here's a couple of things on it. In a statement, they said that the employees are going to be washing their hands at least every 30 minutes. Employees will be required to wear masks, of course. Guests will be required to wear masks, as we've already stated. They're talking about that. And of course, it is noted here in Variety, where I've got the article pulled up about the Alamo Drafthouse. They said that they'll have one of the biggest challenges. They may be the most, I do agree, I think they're the most prepared for something like this, to handle something like this. But I also think that they have the most challenges, compared to an AMC, Regal, or Cinemark, because it is a dine and theater, full scale dine and theater and craft beer. As well. So that kind of is where the challenge is, more so with the wearing the mask. I read something somewhere else today on this. I believe it was MovieWeb with Tim League, where he said, we're going to make sure everyone has a 6 feet distance from each other. But how would that be possible in a movie theater with the seating?
Yeah, I don't know if that means like skipping rows. Like, are you going to like... only every other row can have people, and only so many people per row.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of what was in my mind, because I know I was literally at a Draft House the day they shut down. Like, they shut down at like 6 p.m. and I was at a movie at like
mm-hmm.
1.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, like, the shutdown came all of a sudden. But mm-hmm. yeah, I remember taking a photo in the parking lot, and I was like, wow, nobody's going. And they were enforcing the distance. Like, once you picked your seat on the app, it immediately put gaps between you and other people.
Oh, so even back in March, when last time you went to the theater for a movie, and it was also the last time theaters were open, mostly,
mm-hmm.
they were already doing it then.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, Draft House was ahead of it, and they already had their servers wearing gloves and masks. And that's the other thing about their staff there. So one thing I heard somebody mention was, like, do I really trust theater employees to be, like, cleaning the way they should? Because you think of most movie theaters, a big portion of their employees are, like, teenagers working minimum wage.
Right.
Like, how much do they really care? And, like, they probably don't even really clean their own room. And how can you expect them to do that? But I feel like the Draft House's employees are mostly grown adults, and like this is their full-time job. They treat it like they're, you know, I'm a waiter, I'm a bartender, like that's their occupation, this is how I make my money. So I feel like they would take it a little more seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been out, I mean, we've been mostly still quarantining. Yes, we're still kind of mostly quarantined, but I've actually gone into some stores. I wore the mask, and I wear a face cover. I look like a bounty hunter from Star Wars with all the gear I have on my face.
Oh yeah.
So, I play the Mandalorian theme when I get out of the car, but yeah, I've gone in a few quick, like runs into a store, and then I do drive through for everything else, and curbside. So I witnessed going into one place. I won't throw anybody under the bus, name names, but I went into one place, the employee not wearing a mask, running a storefront.
And especially that's surprising considering here in Austin they had that local ordinance that it's now like $1,000 fine to the business if even a shopper doesn't have a mask on.
Yeah, absolutely. And everywhere else, but I went to a drive-through coffee shop, wearing a mask. They were all wearing masks, but one of the employees not wearing gloves. And I'm thinking, sometimes, you know, those gloves are only in so much of a supply. There's only got to be so much supply of those gloves because everybody's using those gloves right now.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. I have. Because this week we actually just started opening up for me to do in-home consultations again. And I keep a whole, and my boss provided it for me. It's like a whole kit, a whole like in-home sanitary safety kit. So I've got like a ton of masks and boxes of gloves and disposable shoe covers and all kinds of stuff. Hand sanitizer, cleansing spray, like chlorine cleansing spray. It smells like a swimming pool. Like all this stuff in like this bin. And I have to go through all of these health cautions whenever I confirm an appointment with somebody, basically going over the safety protocols that are going to be required before I can come to their home.
We all are doing a way better job because we had to get some plumbing done. The plumbers show up. They're not wearing masks. This was a few weeks ago. And we actually told them, we're on social distance, so we'll talk to you from over here. We were wearing masks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have to explain it to people on the phone before I get there. Like, I go down the list. Anybody had symptoms, by the way, I'm going to go get a health screening every day at the very beginning of the day. Temperature check, answer a bunch of questions, all that stuff before I'm even allowed to work.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. And y'all are doing a good job. Y'all are doing it the right way. That's great.
So yeah, I hope Alamo, and I feel like they will be one of the strictest when it comes to safety with this sort of thing, because political affiliation aside, I feel like they are a very, you know, left-leaning company. So I feel like they are erring on the side of caution.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's the best thing they could do as a business, the best way to do it. So I'm glad they're doing it. It's funny you mentioned, you were talking about running classics movies, which is something the Alamo Drafthouse kind of originally built their name on, was being kind of more of a B movie, classic movies re-released. They kind of made a name for themselves and kind of set themselves apart from others for being unique in that space. And I think that they actually kind of disrupted the industry a little bit with that, because now you see places like Cinemark that do their special, you know, anniversary screenings of movies, classics. They've been doing those, you know, they've been doing those for quite a while. I remember going to a few of them myself at Cinemark. So that was something they did that disrupted the market, and also, you know, being a dine-in theater, full-service draft beer, that also disrupted the market. But it's funny you mention that, because right now, the number one box office film for this week is the original Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I saw that. And what's crazy is myself and my girlfriend are actually looking at movies to watch on July 4th at Blue Starlight,
yeah,
the drive-in.
Yeah,
because they're doing Jaws and Independence Day, and then also a virtual fireworks show, since there will be no fireworks in Austin this year.
No, yeah, they announced that weeks ago. They made that decision, which makes sense, not knowing, but when you have to have something like an event like that, there's a lot of planning that goes on behind it. So I think you have to commit yay or nay pretty early on, and I think they made a responsible decision of pulling out kind of pretty early on of doing that. Of having a but that's a great idea, a virtual fireworks show. But yeah, thanks to the 200 drive-in movie theaters in the greater United States, Jurassic Park screening in those drive-in movie theaters has made it the number one box office movie of the week. And, you know, this is not a question that I had planned to ask you, but I want to run this by you. Do you think we could see a comeback of the drive-in movie theater? Do you think we might actually see new drive-in movie theaters opening up over the next year?
Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised, because even with the work that I do, I've had restaurant owners approach me about basically doing like mini drive-ins outside of their restaurants.
Yeah, yeah.
To where we could put up like a big screen, not theater size, but big screen in their parking lot, and they could have patrons come order food and drink from their cars and watch movies and basically drive traffic into their business.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've got some space, if you're on the outskirts of town, if you've got a little bit of land.
Oh, yeah. This is up near like Waco Temple Colleen area.
Yeah. I heard there was a new one that opened recently in Fredericksburg, another place that's just within a few hours of our city. So, yeah, they're coming around. They're coming along. I think that. Yeah, I think absolutely. I think there's going to be, I think people right now, there's people right now that have the means that are trying to figure out how they could open up a drive-in movie theater before next summer. And that's great, because what that could do is if some of these drive-in movie theaters were to pop, new drive-in movie theaters were to pop up, I think they will replace some of the movie theaters that are ultimately going to close and go out of business as a result of the pandemic. So I think there could be some swap out there. I think obviously some many theaters will survive, including the Alamo Drafthouse, and places that are newer and more updated that have a good following are going to do just fine. They're obviously it's going to be hard for them, but they're going to survive, I think. But some of the older theaters, the ones that maybe weren't as successful, those were the ones that are going to probably be at risk of closing. And you know, I don't know. I could start to try to in our city. I could start to try to speculate which theaters I think would be in trouble. It would be kind of hard to do, but I think just the old ones are the ones that would be more at risk. But I think the drive-ins. There could be a few new drive-ins that might replace some of those theaters that close. So.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree with that, and like. The more the merrier. I mean, drive-in movies are one of those things that I experienced once as a kid and then like never again. But I'm really interested to go back and have that experience. And if it's a good experience, good, because even like Toronto International Film Festival, they just announced that they're going to do their festival. They're still going to have it in September, but they're going to do it partially virtual, partially drive-in, partially in person. So only like very few people will be allowed to do the in-person, and then the majority will do it virtually, and then they're also having a drive-in option. So I hope Alamo does that for Fantastic Fest, because I know they do like the outdoor screening.
Yeah.
So hopefully they, you know, break out the inflatable screens and, you know, they'll probably make it virtual, but hopefully they'll still be able to bring in some bigger movies and do those drive-in style.
Yeah, they were doing what they call them, the rolling road shows. They've been doing the rolling road shows for quite a few years. I know you've been to the Jaws out on the lake, I believe. Mm-hmm.
I have a Mondo print from a Texas Chainsaw Massacre rolling road show from like 2009 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually the actual movie showing was out on the property where they filmed the remake.
Yeah, and there's many of those they could do if they're drive-in style. That would be very successful. Right now, they would be very successful, but they would continue to be very successful. I remember going to the Big Lebowski at Dart Bowl years ago. It was in the parking mm-hmm. lot, and then bowling afterwards. So they've had some great events over the years with that. And so, yeah, bring out the inflatable screens and let's find some parking lots and fields where cars can drive.
And I know it's not the perfect theatrical experience, right? Because you want that surround sound and the Dolby Atmos and everything. But yeah, if I have to go watch a movie in my car with the radio as my sound to be safe, then in order to get new movies, I'm all for it. And if some new drive-ins pop up, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then if drive-ins come back, if they are coming back, people will find ways to reinvent the wheel and find some new innovations that they can incorporate into the drive-in experience that wasn't there the first time around. Back in the
bring in some food trucks and stuff.
Food trucks, so that would be their draft beer. You know, that would be something that could be there. Maybe better outside sound systems installed, or you know, it's played through your radio, so you tune in through a, you know, there's a way to tune into it, but maybe some companies start coming up with like a speaker, a drive-in movie theater speaker that you can put in your car, and it gets you get better. You get THX mobile THX sound in your car.
Yeah, and that would be great because I've done national chat support a few times in the last month or so, and there's people all over the country that are literally coming on the chat on the Best Buy website because they're looking for FM radios because they're going to drive-in movies and they don't want to leave their car on all the time. So mm-hmm. that's like, to me, a telltale that like people are going to drive-ins again.
Also, I get, you know, these top 10 list of top 10 new gadgets, things that you need to buy, things that are under $99 that you need to buy. Well, I just stumbled onto one of those lists yesterday, and there's a portable air condition that's wireless that you charge up, and it's like a cube shape. It's probably about the size of a video game system, like a boxy game video game system, and it's a small portable little AC.
Yeah, perfect.
It was getting great reviews. If that works, I'm thinking about getting one just because sometimes in the studio, I don't know if you've ever been here when it gets really hot. This is the hottest room in my house. Even when we have the AC cranking and blowing coal like a freezer all over the house, this room doesn't get that AC. So I was thinking maybe if they're quiet, I wouldn't mind having one of those in this room for on nights when it gets kind of hot in here. So I may be something I might be getting. And if it works, I'll take one of those to the theater and set it up. There's also the ACs, the little things you can wear around your neck that are cooling.
Mm-hmm.
And these are kind of not the things you would put in the refrigerator, but they look almost like a Bluetooth headset. And they go around mm-hmm. your neck, and they're supposed to be cooling ACs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Neck wearing AC. So that's great news. If that is coming back, I would love to see drive-ins. I remember going to drive-ins like for a couple of times when I was really young, and I think Saturday Night Fever or Grease that I saw in a drive-in movie theater, but I can't remember which one it was. I just remember it was one of the iconic John Travolta movies where there's music and dancing. I just can't remember which one. Probably Grease though. So I remember that, and then movie theaters went away really quickly after that. And I remember my last experience at a drive-in movie theater was in Corpus Christi, Texas, in the 80s. I was staying in a hotel with my brother, my parents. Me and my brother were in the swimming pool at probably a La Quinta, and it was on the side of a highway. And I remember there was an old drive-in movie theater that looked like it was a crack house across the highway that was playing X-rated movies.
Oh.
And I remember me and my brother could see a little bit of the action from across the highway. And we were trying to, because it was at an awkward angle where if you leaned back just the right way, you could see a little bit of what was going on in a huge, giant screen. So that was my last experience at a drive-in.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'll never forget that. Me and my brother were just chuckling. We just thought it was the most hilarious thing. And that's kind of the thing that would happen. That's kind of the thing that happened. It was a different time, a different place that would never happen today or be allowed to happen today. But that was kind of a different time and a different era. So getting into something else that was also from a different time and a different era that we never thought we would see again is Michael Keaton back. What we know for sure, he's going to be back as Wayne, but we're not for sure it's Bruce Wayne, are we?
We're not sure he's back yet.
Well, that's true. I want to put that out there.
If they get him, I guess the role's being envisioned as like a Nick Fury type thing.
Yeah, that's what I keep hearing.
As like a Bruce Wayne mentor, a la like the Batman Beyond animated show kind of thing.
Yeah. That's what this really is. It sounds like they're really wanting this to be kind of intertwining the Batman Beyond, which to me is like one of the biggest. If that happens, to me, that's been something I've been dreaming about for the last couple of years, is Michael Keaton coming back to do kind of a Batman Beyond live action.
Yeah, and what's crazy is I remember a few years ago you and I talked about Birdman, and we were like, he's pretty much playing Batman.
Yeah.
They couldn't use Batman, so they called it Birdman.
Right.
And I was like, man, if we could get Keaton back now, because I feel like Keaton for the last few years has been like he has been on top of his game.
Back on a roll. Back on a roll for sure. He's been on a hot streak. And everything he's been in has been fun to watch and been, you know, just like you said, just vintage Keaton. Everyone remembers Keaton from his amazing stretch that he had through the 80s and 90s. But then he kind of was quiet for a while. And I think that was by choice. I don't think it was a lack of opportunities for him. I think he kind of stepped back for a little while on his own terms. For him to come back and have that run that he's had over the last few years is great. Now, like I said, I think this is something that either leaked. It certainly wasn't, I don't know why it was announced. I don't think it was officially announced that they're in talks with him, because that wouldn't make a lot of sense. So something that is leaked, somebody that knew something, that talked to someone else, that has an ear to the door over at DC and Warner Brothers. It's definitely, to me, it's a great idea. It makes a lot of sense. I thought maybe it would, if Keaton ever came back to DC, it would be right into a Batman Beyond limited series, live action for streaming, or maybe an actual standalone Batman Beyond movie, which actually probably could still happen. If this Keaton thing happens, I think you still get a standalone Batman Beyond. I think that's part of this.
I would love it, because I think Batman Beyond is one of those very underrated animated programs that happened in the 90s, because it was so 90s.
Yeah.
Like they're trying to be futuristic and be hip and cool. But when you look at it deep down at what the story is and everything, it's really fascinating and something that had not been really explored until that.
It's interesting. It's an interesting story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's that question that we had with The Dark Knight Returns with like, oh, old Batman. But what do we get when we have Batman who he just can't be Batman? He's too old. What does he do now?
Mm-hmm.
Becomes a recluse and then, you know, takes somebody under his wing to train and kind of be that also not just a trainer, but that Alfred person, that person in the ear. helping guide them.
Yeah, it becomes an interesting, you know, and that the cool thing about Batman Beyond, everybody knows, I mean, almost everybody knows the story of Superman. They know the story of Batman. They know the story of Spider-Man. Those are three stories that people that are even just mildly into superhero movies could probably tell you the story of how Spider-Man came to be.
Mm-hmm.
But going off on kind of the beaten path a little bit and doing something a little different that not everybody does know about, but still has some familiarity because of its attachment to Batman, that, you know, that could be really fun and interesting for them to go that route. And Keaton would be great, but Keaton's still part of Marvel also. So
yeah, he is.
So how do you feel? I used to be kind of against the double dipping. And I was against double dipping for Marvel DC, but I was also against the double dipping for Star Trek Star Wars. I didn't love it when JJ had already done Star Trek, came over to Star Wars at first. I thought, well, that's double dipping. I'm not sure if I like that. But how do you feel about it? Does it bother you?
No, not really. I mean, we've even had several actors, you know, J. Jonah Jameson, for instance, he was Marvel, then he was Commissioner Gordon, and then he's back to Spider-Man. It doesn't really bother me much. And then now you have Jared Leto, who was Joker, and now he's going to be Morbius. And it's one of those inevitable things where comic book movies are the thing right now. And so when good actors want to be in comic book movies, I say give me everything, because I've even heard Ryan Reynolds is trying to get a small part in the Snyder Cut Justice League.
Wow, that's interesting. And we've had even some actors now at this point, because of reboots, that have been in one or the other twice in different roles.
Exactly. Yeah. J.K. Simmons. He was J. Jonah Jameson in the Raimi Spider-Man, and then he was Gordon in the Justice League, and now he's J. Jonah Jameson again in the Marvel Spider-Man. So
yeah,
it is what it is, and he'll probably be in the Snyder Cut.
Yeah, he probably will be. There's just some people you just want in your movies. They're just really good in whatever they're in, and they just make your movie better. Michael Keaton just happens to be one of those people. Morbius, by the way, I think is one of the most watched trailers of last year.
Oh, it's a fantastic trailer.
Yeah.
I'm not even really a fan of the character, but I'm down for the movie.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad we're going to get it. Hopefully sooner rather than later. So there's all these different scenarios and possibilities if you get Keaton back, and by the way, if this deal doesn't get done, that's going to be the biggest, tease and then disappointment that we've had probably since the whole thinking we were going to, since when we've had this big of a tease and then disappointment, but it would be a pretty, pretty bad one, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because this is one of those things where I think there's still a big group of people out there who, to them, like, Keaton is their Batman.
Yeah,
like that's Batman. And so to tease bringing him back, and then not only bringing him back, but folding him into their cinematic universe, and something DC can do that is different than Marvel is the whole multiverse idea, which they've showed can be successful with their television crossover.
Yeah.
Because I think for a while it probably scared them a little bit. Like, will people get the multi-universe type idea? And people loved that crossover on the CW. Even if they don't watch those shows regularly, they watched that crossover.
Are we going to overuse the multiverse? Because, and I love multiverse. Right now I'm all in on multiverse. For DC, I'm all in on it. But I just finished watching the first season of Star Trek Discovery. There's multiverse in Star Trek. they used multiverse in Miles Morales Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. It was the big huge part of that movie. So it's there in a lot of other places. Could it get worn out?
I think it will not get worn out as long as you keep it interesting and you try to stay away from being too convoluted. Because mm-hmm. I think that's the problem with a lot of people with playing around with the idea of both time travel and multiple mm-hmm. universes is when you try to get cute and you try to get too smart, quote unquote, mm-hmm. you lose the audience. So I think as long mm-hmm. as you stay true to form and just be like, this is Batman from 19, this is the Burton Batman, or I think on the CW they even referenced the 89 Batman by putting in the reporter Knox in a small scene, and it was like Earth, you know, 1989 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just don't get too cute with it.
They kind of started to set this up in the TV with the CW series this past fall. They started to set this up because they reference the Burtonverse.
Yeah, they reference the Burtonverse. They also reference the Christopher Reeve Superman.
Yeah.
By having Brandon Routh return.
Yeah.
As the Superman from Superman Returns.
Yeah.
So they set it up and it worked. And I don't want to say definitively it was a test, but now hearing this news about Keaton, I do kind of feel like maybe it was a test to gauge reaction, gauge whether people understood it, all of those sort of things.
And what better place to test it is just to roll it out on TV where there's less risk.
Yeah, and you even had Ezra Miller show up.
Yeah.
In the CW Flash.
Which was great. It was a great bit, him coming back for mm-hmm. that. I mean, coming in to do that the video of him went viral with his Flash, with the CW Flash.
Is this cosplay? Oh, do you want a selfie, bro?
No, I'm sorry. No.
I'm also the Flash.
You're also the what?
The Flash?
The Flash? The Flash.
It's complicated.
I like your outfit. It seems
freaking
comfy.
Yours is pretty cool.
Smooth. It
seems safe.
And it's breathable. I'm Barry Allen. No.
So that was kind of maybe, you know what I think? I really think that this is a done deal. I think Keaton is coming back. I think it's kind of a build up here. I think they're probably still trying to work out final numbers and whatnot. But I think this is kind of all to build up excitement by leaking this. But I think this and then you get the next wave of excitement when it's announced that it's official and you roll out the big presser for it.
Oh yeah, because it's almost exactly a month ago we got the news about the Snyder Cut.
Yeah,
and that news was big for a long time because there's not a lot going on.
Yeah.
With Hollywood.
Yeah,
and then you drop this, and then you say not only could he be in the Flash, but he could be a continuing supporting character in Batgirl and other movies. A la Nick Fury, kind of this mm-hmm. strategist who's no longer Batman, but he's, you know, behind the scenes helping all these different heroes within different universes.
Yeah, and he could come in. He'd come in for some movies. Some movies he wouldn't show up. He would be referenced, but he wouldn't show up. Some movies he would have a bigger part in them than he would in others, but much like Nick Fury, where he was an actual co-star and Captain Marvel. But then in other movies, he just makes a few cameos. So he can be used in different levels depending on the movie. But that's kind of an ongoing thing. And then, yeah, you have the scenario where you could do a standalone Batman Beyond, and that could be another thing there. So it's really exciting and fun to think about all the possibilities. DC really has won so far the pandemic. For between DC and Marvel, they've had the biggest news of the pandemic.
Yeah, because Marvel, the only news that's really ever come out during the pandemic has been things being pushed back.
Yeah.
They haven't announced any new stuff.
Yeah, because I think they were kind of, everything was kind of set for them for a while and what they were going to have or what they were. And there's probably other things that they weren't ready to announce. They do have in their back pocket, but they can't really.
The pandemic pushed everything out, out of the way.
So they can't even leak or announce some stuff that they probably are trying to keep under wraps because it needed to be set up in the movies that were yet to come out, like Black Widow and the next Spider-Man movie. So these other things were going to be kind of a surprise that they were going to unveil as the timeline moved along. But so they're kind of, they're handcuffed a little bit. For DC, you know, DC was kind of a, you know, things for them were sort of a blank canvas of sorts. They had, you know, what they had that people, everybody knew was coming, going to be coming, but they were able to roll out some of these little surprises. So yeah, they've had a, I hate to say anyone's had a great pandemic, but if anybody's had a great pandemic, it's probably been DC.
Definitely.
So good for them. Any other thoughts on the whole thing, on the possibility, or anything you'd like to see out of this?
I mean, I'm excited, and this is coming from, you know, somebody who adored the 89 Batman. I stumbled across a photo from a Christmas where I opened up the VHS of 89 Batman, and Keaton's not even necessarily my favorite Batman, but I still really adore that first movie.
Yeah, I mean, same here. I mean, it's a different kind of story in Batman for a different time. Just like the 60s Batman was a different kind of story and you know, portrayal of Batman, but it was the right Batman for that time. But yeah, you know, and Christian Bale, I mean, he did become my favorite Batman after the Batman Begins came out and that trilogy, as did Heath Ledger, for me, took the throne away from Jack Nicholson as my favorite Joker. But that's not to say I still don't enjoy opening up 89 Batman and watching it. Like you said, I mean, when that movie came out, I had the cup, I had the card, I had a cardboard, I went to Spencer's Gifts and layawayed that cardboard stand up of Michael Keaton Batman. And paid on it for a month, and finally got it out. And I remember my mom rolling her eyes when I walked out of the mall with that huge cardboard stand up. And I plopped that down in my bedroom, and I had the poster. And so not since Star Wars was I that excited about something in movies as I was about Batman 89.
Oh yeah, and I mean it opens up a lot of possibilities that are theoretically they sound cool, and then I kind of wonder, like, would that be a good idea, or could they possibly ruin something that I love by doing that? With like, okay, could you bring Christian Bale back? Could you go to the Nolan multiverse? But would that, if it ends up not working, could that taint the Dark Knight trilogy?
Right, you've got that, and so you want to be careful there. And is Val Kilmer and that Joel Schumacher, is that separate? I think that's a separate universe from the, you know, what they did with Tim Burton's Batman, even though it was an actual sequel.
Yeah, he was a producer in Forever, and Batman and Robin were direct sequels to Batman and Batman Returns. But yeah, I feel like by doing, if they go through with this, you're basically saying those are their own thing.
Yeah, because you're saying that, you know, what Keaton did, you could ignore and disconnect from those two films that were supposed to be real sequels to the Keaton films. You could disconnect from those easily and say those were their own thing. Because in a multiverse, some things are the same, some things are different.
Yep.
Not everything's the same. So you might have still had the same Alfred the Butler in the Joel Schumacher verse, but you may have had maybe two different Schumacher verses, and one was on whatever acid they were for the George Clooney version, and then the other one was not so much on acid, maybe just, you know, having the Val Kilmer version, which was a little bit not as a little more toned down.
There was some Burton influence, and by the way, like, rest rest in peace, Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, and Joel Schumacher. And I actually liked the Val Kilmer Joel Schumacher Batman. I did not care for the George Clooney Joel Schumacher Batman, but mm-hmm. I still enjoyed, and I was on board for Kilmer after Kilmer got the role, and I went to see Kilmer as Batman. I was like, okay, I could be fine with Kilmer for Batman for quite a while. Of course, yep. He didn't come back and do Batman again after that. So then we had to try to give George Clooney a shot. And I went to that movie and I was like, I could be fine with them giving this a break for a while and not doing this again for a while and trying to figure it out and try to do it differently next time. But yeah, I mean, and Joel Schumacher, of course, I mean, he's got a legend and all these great films. So rest in peace. I mean, he had, a long stretch of these great films that he was a part of.
Yeah, and I didn't really understand until later, and I got older, and I started doing some research and reading that he was under a lot of pressure from the studio mm-hmm. and the sponsors, basically the McDonald's and stuff of the world, mm-hmm. because I even heard one person say it wasn't Joel Schumacher that ruined Batman, it was Tim Burton, because he went too weird and too adult with Batman Returns.
Right.
And so DC and Warner Brothers, famously course correctors, went completely the other direction because we got to sell toys, we got to sell Happy Meals, all that.
And really something in the middle was enough and perfect, not having to go too weird. And of course, Tim Burton just ahead of his time. Now we're also going to have Robert Pattinson, by the way, in the Batman. Mm-hmm. And Matt Reeves' Batman, which is going to be happening not too far off from when we're going to have, this other Batman with Keaton. So you have now a cinema world where you can have multiple Batmans in movies, in different mm-hmm. movies, in different series, and be separate universes. And that's kind of the world we're in now. That's a great thing about movies and TV in 2020, that we can do that now. We have that ability to have those, and people, the audience, they trust the audience to be okay with it and follow both characters and both Batmans and both series and not get confused. But back then, so now you could have a separate Burton weird Batman going on, and then you could have your more mainstream Batman going on, and you can have that now. And that's something back then you had one Batman, so it had to be the right Batman that sold the toys and brought the kids to the theater. And so they did. They went a little bit too weird. And then, they came back with Schumacher, and he kind of got his hand forced. And that was why Burton got forced out, was because of it. It was too weird. The first of his two films were much better than the second one. But it's funny you mentioned the second film, or funny that we brought up the second film. There was also talk or speculation about maybe Michelle Pfeiffer coming back as Catwoman. Would you want mm-hmm. to see that? Would that be interesting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, give me Michelle Pfeiffer in anything. Yeah. I think she's still gorgeous and she's still fantastic when she works.
Yeah, and she took a break for a while because she was raising her kids. So she took, again, much like Michael Keaton, ironically, but she took a self-imposed break. And then she's come back the last few years and she's been in some films and she's been great in films again and she hasn't lost her touch. She said in an interview not too long ago that her favorite role is still playing Catwoman. So that's kind of what spawned that idea or possibility. You even got Billy Dee Williams, who was going to be Two-Face
mm-hmm.
in the original Burton movies. But then when Burton was canned or he stormed off, they scrapped that idea of doing the Billy Dee Williams Two-Face. But maybe that happened. And the audience just never got to see that.
Right.
So there's another interesting thing. Maybe they figure a way to work that in. Now, this would be, he would be introduced in the Flashpoint movie. And that mm-hmm. storyline, it has a lot of similarities to what the story and the origin of Batman. And so there's going to be, that's a really interesting place to bring him in.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And introduce his character.
The Flashpoint story alone is one of those comics and even their animated DC Warner Brothers did an animated version and it's a really good movie. So I think there's a lot you can do with that, and it really expands the possibilities of future movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Would we seen Mark Hamill in the Flash live action? He was in both TV versions of the Flash. He's also, of course, the voice of the Joker in the animations for several years. He did it for several years. He's not doing it right now, but he said he would come back if they asked him, as long as it was with the same Batman, because he wants to only work with that particular actor.
Oh yeah, Kevin Conroy. Yeah, he is very vocal about how he will only work with Kevin Conroy. And in the CW multiverse crossover, they actually brought in Kevin Conroy to play an old Bruce Wayne.
Oh, that's cool. I did not know that.
And he's a voice actor, but they brought him in and, you know, put him in a back brace and all of this stuff to play an older Bruce Wayne.
That's clever. You know, what's funny is this, I'd actually want to do a video on this, but this is not the first time, though, that a Batman, iconic Batman like Michael Keaton, has been on the shelf for a number of years and then was brought back to play Batman again. That actually would be Adam West that has that title as the first time a Batman was shelved for several years and then brought back again, because Adam West plays Batman in the late 60s in the movie and the TV series. And I guess that was over a span of 4 years, maybe less, that he was Batman in the series and the movie. And then he goes away for a while, but comes back when they do that TV, the TV kind of a variety series with the DC superheroes. And and so he comes back to play Batman in that. And so does Burt Ward.
Burt Ward. Yeah.
Burt Ward playing his Robin in that version. And so he comes back for that. But then he also later, years later, does the voice in the animated Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So he had three runs as Batman.
Yeah. And they did that, I think it was like Return to the Cave or something like that. Mm-hmm. Kind of TV, like it alternated between like them now and them back in the day, describing their antics on set and like real life experience. And it was pretty interesting. And then, yeah, they did like, you know, Scooby-Doo crossovers and all that stuff.
Yeah. He came back in various different ways as Batman for many years. He was supposed to be James Bond at one point, but that didn't work out. I think he turns it down. Can't remember exactly what the reasoning was for that. Well, he was going to be James Bond. I remember when 89 Batman comes out, he was upset that he didn't get to do it. He wanted to do that Batman too.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the Nicholson when Heath Ledger got cast and Jack Nicholson was kind of like, you know, I should come back.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember that came up with Shatner when they did the new Star Trek prequels. And I don't know how much of that was just him goofing on J.J. Abrams, but I remember there was a whole thing where he was mad that they didn't ask him back for the new Star Trek movies, the J.J. movies. And they brought back Leonard Nimoy, of course, for a couple of those films, but they didn't bring back William Shatner. So I remember that. I think the Adam West thing was real. I think he really was upset that he didn't get asked to do it. And I don't think at the time he got it, that it was going to be a very different type of Batman movie and just wouldn't have felt right to have him in there as Batman because it didn't match or fit with what he did. I think that the thing is, again, now we live in a world where you can have multiple Batmans. So I think if that had been now, you could have had the Adam West Batman reunion movie. And that would have been going on coinciding with another Batman movie at the same time.
Yeah.
So we're in a different time now where everybody gets a chance to be their Batman again. So let me ask you this. If Keaton gets this and he does this, does he become the kind of move back up to being kind of what people envision? Because I think Christian Bale took the throne of what people think of when they think of Batman.
Yeah, I think Christian Bale did a phenomenal job as both Bruce Wayne and Batman, which was fantastic. And I was really impressed with everything he did in as both Bruce Wayne and Batman. I think Ben Affleck, for as much as people give him, you know, garbage, like, I think he did a phenomenal job. I think him, in terms of like the look and the fighting and everything, mm-hmm. was probably the most comic accurate. But I think Bale mm-hmm. was definitely, in terms of overall character and, you know, having the rules and all of that, I think that was the most accurate. But I do think that it might also do for Keaton what the Michael Jordan documentary did for Michael Jordan.
Exactly, yeah.
A lot of people never got to see Michael Jordan play. And it wasn't until the Last Dance doc that they got to see that and are like, oh, wow, now I really need to think about this whole LeBron-Michael Jordan
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
And I think that might – bringing Keaton back might also bring Keaton back into a lot of people who didn't grow up seeing his two renditions of Batman. They might, you know, come to start being more of like, oh, I actually like Keaton more. Who knows?
Yeah, because you get to start to see him in the backdrop of better effect, better special effects, better visual effects, maybe better writing.
Yeah, I mean, his suit almost weighed more than he did. And he was wearing like Nike tennis shoes
yeah.
covered up with
yeah.
rubber
yeah.
plates and stuff.
Which is another thing he has in common with Michael Jordan is the, yeah. the sneakers.
Yeah.
It's the shoes.
Thunderpop was not recorded in front of a studio or audience.
Sometimes I dream that he is me. Got to see that's how I dream to be.
All right, we're going to get into, in this 128th episode, our season finale, Agree or Disagree, for you, Johnny Lightfoot, right now. By the way, catch Johnny on his podcast, his other podcast, Matinee Talk, on most major platforms where you get your podcast.
Yep, and every other week.
And y'all just did the Five Bloods.
Yeah, we did the Five Bloods, King of Staten Island, and then like Julian did a short little rant on Artemis Fowl.
Oh, wow. Okay. So those are some of the new ones. Video on Demands that had come out over the last few weeks, and two of the biggest ones, of course, three of the biggest ones. And I think at least two of those three, actually all three of those were originally slated for theatrical release, correct?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure The Five Bloods probably would have gotten at least limited because it's Spike Lee and, you know, they probably wanted to get some Oscar consideration. And mm-hmm. Delroy Lindo that's him and Hugh Jackman are probably the best male performances I've seen of any movie this year.
And by the way, it's interesting you brought that up because, yeah, Netflix generally would do that. Much like they did last year with the Adam Sandler movie, the name of the movie is the tip of my tongue, where he plays the jeweler. They had a limited release with that, and then
Irishman as well.
Irishman was another example of that. But this year, this is paradigm shifting. But this year they had to change the rules, just for now at least, where mm-hmm. they're going to Oscars for the first time are going to allow movies to be considered that did not have theatrical releases, but were originally scheduled for theatrical releases to be considered.
Correct.
Much like I think would be the case with a Defy Bloods would be a movie that if it was in fact slated for a limited release, then it will be eligible for an Oscar consideration. So that's going to be historical. Never happened in the history of the Oscars that direct streaming has been considered for consideration. So there'll be a lot of movies too that will be in that, at least a handful that I think will be contenders that were straight to streaming. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So in this agree or disagree, number one, Does the speaking of going video on demand, Johnny Depp, his reemergence in the upcoming Waiting for the Barbarians, that is also starring, by the way, Robert Pattinson, the other Batman, who's popping up in so many things right now. Robert Pattinson, maybe the busiest guy in Hollywood right now, because he's popping up in so many things. But he's in the movie with Johnny Depp, this movie called The Waiting for the Barbarians, is scheduled for release later in the summer for at least a video on demand. Trailer's got a lot of buzz behind it. A lot of people talking about it online, really excited about this film. Do you think this movie is a indication that Johnny Depp has officially been uncanceled?
Oh, man, that's tough, because I remember a time, probably freshman and sophomore year in college, where I felt like Johnny Depp was my favorite actor working.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, late 90s, early 2000s. And I what's happened with him has been kind of strange. Like, he hasn't quite done what, you know, some folks like Bruce Willis and Mel Gibson, to where they just kind of start phoning it in for checks.
Right.
I feel like Johnny Depp still does try in his roles.
Yeah.
In terms of being canceled, it's so tough to say, because cancel culture is so rampant now.
Yeah.
But I think if there is something that can get him out of that space with some people, a role like this could. So I think I would agree that Johnny Depp is so beloved, and with Disney Plus and, you know, all the Pirates movies, so many people, that's a big part of a lot of people's favorite movies are, you know, those pirate movies. So yeah.
My dad's favorite series.
He's on his way. He just needs to do better than, I can't even think of the name, where he played Whitey, but the gangster. And
yeah,
he just needs to just pick better movies. He needs to be in some good stuff.
Yeah.
He just doesn't need to just take something like The Lone Ranger, Big Mistake. And yeah, the whole stuff with Amber Heard is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully he can get back on track, because when Johnny Depp is at the top of his game, I think he's one of the most talented actors there is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's getting good roles. You want to see him in stuff like The Irishman, you know, really good movies like that with really good directors. Is Amber Heard canceled?
Ooh, that one's a little bit easier. I think she might be canceled.
Like, well, she won't be back for Aquaman 2.
No, yeah. I mean, she might have to go. I think she will. She will have to go back to doing those smaller movies that she started her career doing.
Yeah.
Those kind of like B-budget, you know, Blumhouse-type horror films.
Yeah. And she's from our backyard, by the way. She started out here in Austin.
Yep.
So, number two, speaking of canceled or and uncanceled, Mel Gibson, and this question won't end up, it'll sound like it's about Mel Gibson, but it won't actually end up being about Mel Gibson. But number two, Mel Gibson will not be returning as Rocky in Chicken Run 2, which is a sequel that was announced that is going to, in fact, happen. They're going to replace him. There were some more controversies around Mel Gibson that surfaced recently. So that speculation is out there. That's why he wasn't brought back for Chicken Run 2. But my question is not about Mel Gibson. It is about Chicken Run 2. So Chicken Run 2 was announced, and a lot of people were surprised, not about the Mel Gibson part, but the fact that there is going to be a Chicken Run 2. And it's been about a decade since the original. So that's one of the reasons people were surprised. They didn't think that there was even ever going to be a sequel, being that it took him 10 years to get around to making one. So my question for you is, do you agree or disagree that this might be a sign of what is to come, that we may be heading for, at least for the next couple of years, an animation domination with movies and TV because of the pandemic? Animations are probably easier to make in a COVID world. Do you agree or disagree with that? That maybe because of the pandemic is the reason why we are getting the sequel?
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly that we're going to see more animation, and we're going to see more of those films that are Russian director Timur Berkov, I think is his name. He did Unfriended, but more of those style movies where it's you know, people on their computer, and you also had the John Cho movie that the name escapes me, where it's just a guy on his laptop, with the camera searching for, you know, what happened to his daughter. You're going to see more of those type of movies. Pandemic related type stuff, you know, things of that nature. Even when I did the virtual Chattanooga Film Festival, one of the things they did was an anthology of short films that were all, you know, under 10 minutes, where it was all things people shot in their homes and they just submitted and it was all done this cameras at home. And you're going to see more of that, more animation. The success of Trolls 2 doing VOD, it also is a positive for studios that, hey, we can make decent money doing VOD. And then also Scoob.
Did pretty good business as well, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In its own right, yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. I think, and if you had a thing that was probably on the kind of the back burner, maybe it was not a fast track and it was animation, it's probably getting fast track now. We probably will get Trolls 3 probably a lot faster than we would have because of this possible window of time now that we may see, and also in television, that we might see some more animation stuff. Beavis and Butthead may get rebooted again really soon. Things that would not have otherwise happened, things that maybe be, we might get a new King of the Hill really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Fox may be writing a huge check to Mike Judge right now to voice some King of the Hill episodes for next year.
Oh yeah.
Those are the kind of things that we may, that would have possibly happened, but maybe it wouldn't have been a priority and it wouldn't have been something that would have happened so quickly, but could now be a priority to get some content. I'm already seeing TV kind of a lot, even a little faster than maybe I would have expected, making adjustments in the programming. There's a show right now, I think on TBS, that is comedians trying to compete in a tournament, doing funny stuff from their house. So there's a show like that. There's another celebrity show with celebrities doing a talent show, I think, from their homes where they're competing with each other. So there's already a lot of these things that are starting to pop up that are using what they have to create, to create content for television. And some of these, another one is a live dating show done on Zoom that's on, I think, E! That I just saw the other night. And some of these shows will actually become big hits and will stay around even after the pandemic, I think. Like a live Zoom dating show, I could see that maybe being something kind of raw and unique and different that might actually become a hit.
Yeah,
because of definitely. Its spontaneity and the fact that maybe people are a little more in their comfort zone while they're sitting in front of a computer at home, opposed to being in a studio with bright lights. And I know you've been in studios before and seen the, you know, how uncomfortable they really are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with people standing around, cold air conditioned, bright lights right in your eye. They're not necessarily comfortable places to be, but home, yeah, that's comfortable. So another thing that came up in the news this week was talk of the Beverly Hills Cop 4, which we've actually known about for a while now, that is in fact going to happen. It's probably a little bit further away now than what we had originally thought because of the pandemic. Everything is pushed back. Everything's delayed. Fingers crossed that Coming to America still happens in December. But yeah, so Beverly Hills Cop 4 is in fact happening. In fact, I think it's going to be Eddie Murphy's next movie after Coming to America. So the same director team that brought us Bad Boys for Life are coming in to do Beverly Hills Cop 4, which is a great idea. I love that team up again, because those guys did a great job on, and I know you guys like, I know you and your other podcast, y'all really was fond of Bad Boys for Life as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the same guys are coming back to do Beverly Hills Cop 4. They're working on a script right now. It's coming up. The question came up though, especially since there was a Eddie Murphy meeting the Bad Boys in Atlanta months ago, and it was a viral video that came up on the web when they were over at Tyler Perry Studios. They were filming pickup shots for Coming to America, and they were filming some stuff for Bad Boys for Life, both the same soundstage. And the three came into contact with each other, and they met each other on the set, on their mutual sets while they were working on their movies. And so now people are starting to connect the dots a little bit. Both Beverly Hills Cop and Bad Boys for Life are Bruckheimer birthed movies.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say if there's a Bruckheimer verse, do these two things coexist in the same world? So there's been some talk about the idea of whether there would ever be a crossover between Beverly Hills Cop and the Bad Boys. Do you agree or disagree that that's a good idea?
That one's so tough because I think as much as they're similar, they're also very different.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see it. I could see an instance where, you can't do a full-on crossover, but I could see an instance to where, like, yeah, you want to use the Bad Boys in a Beverly Hills Cop 4 for a bit.
Yeah. So it probably, if it happened, it would be more for a cameo, like a quick thing. Maybe they come in and help on one thing, but it's like, maybe, you know, we're talking maybe 15 minutes of a movie.
Yeah, no, there is no way in a, because Eddie Murphy has his whole thing with Netflix and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to be the star, like Axel Foley is going to be the star of Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Yeah, he's got to be, because that movie's been, people have been waiting for that for a long time. Axel Foley fans have been waiting for that film for a long time. And so they're hoping that Beverly Hills Cop 4 does the same thing for Axel Foley that Rocky Balboa did for Sylvester Stallone, and that it was sort of a kind of fixed some of the things with Rocky that was broken, and it kind of left a good taste. It left a much better taste in people's mouth from the previous sequel, the Rocky 5. For Rocky fans, it kind of tied things up and made them have a good kind of. And Creed has continued that, but gave him a good lasting memory of Rocky on the back end. So hopefully Axel Foley will get the same thing with Beverly Hills Cop 4. I trust the people that are connected to it, the names that are involved in it. So, and yeah, that is a Netflix deal. Interesting story, though. Years ago, they were developing a Beverly Hills Cop TV series, and CBS had picked it up, and they shot the pilot. So the pilot was filmed, but it was going to be more focused on Axel Foley's son. So an actor, a young actor, I don't even know who the actor was cast to play Axel Foley's son. And Axel Foley was going to be just on occasionally as a guest star. Like, he was going to appear in the pilot kind of as a guest star, but be on the pilot for a good deal of the show. And he was going to act as a kind of an Axel Foley unofficial sequel. But then it was going to be mostly just to set up his son for the series.
Oh.
So I remember actually seeing photos of Eddie Murphy, and he was back in his, you probably could Google it, probably find, he put in Beverly Hills Cop CBS TV series. It was about, it's been a number of years now. It was between 2005 and 2008, somewhere in that window that I think the pilot was shot. But yeah, so that show never gets picked up. The pilot doesn't get picked up. CBS didn't pick it up. So if that show had happened though, probably where we're at right now with Axel Foley would be much different.
Oh yeah,
and the idea of there being a movie or a fourth movie may not have even come to be. But yeah, so that was going to happen with his son. It was going to be still going to be a Beverly Hills Cop name show. But there's pictures of him in an alley with the actor that was playing his son, and he's got the famous Detroit Lions Letterman jacket on. And,
oh yeah,
and he's in the Axel Foley jeans and sneakers, and he's wearing and he looks like Axel Foley, and it was around 2008. So anyway, yeah, so that almost happened. For thoughts and advice in this 128th episode, I just want to let everybody know to stay safe. I'm pleading with you because it's tricky right now. The fatality rates for COVID is really low compared to what we had expected, at least thus far, and hopefully, knock on wood, that continues. But the risk is still very high. People is very contagious, and people are still getting sick. And hospitals are, I know because I have friends that are nurses, their hospitals are full right now. So, yeah, I know people are say things like, oh, the news makes everything so dramatic, and because they need that, they need the ratings, and they need people, the eyeballs on the on their news and whatever. Yeah, I think there's a lot to that, but I also think that what's real is real. And if I have friends that are nurses and they're telling me their hospitals are at maximum capacity, I believe them. They have no reason to lie to me about that. And I know two people in the medical industry right now that are telling me in Houston and Austin, their hospitals are full right now, and they're having to start now using children's hospitals for the overflowage. And there are still now, and there are medical workers that are starting to get sick in our state. We're in Texas, but this is going on in Arizona also. And I know they're dealing with it in Florida and other places. So that's the problem. Yeah. The fatality rate has been low, but the people getting sick has been very high. And if the hospitals are maxed out in capacity, that's not good. That's an infrastructure problem. That if that were to become worse, then that's a serious thing. And I know I've gone out sparingly, but when I've gone out, I've worn a mask and I've worn a face guard. And I'm not a judgmental person. I don't like being judged for wearing a mask, but I don't like being judged for not wearing a mask, because early on in the pandemic, I wore a mask and I got judged for wearing a mask, because it was before they started really ramping up telling people to wear a mask. I was already wearing a mask and I was getting judged for it. Then when I went out on an occasional walk without a mask, I remember getting a side eye from people for not wearing a mask. So there's a lot of judging for both. But I think just using common sense, I went to two places on Saturday to run some errands, and people were not trying to social distance. Like, I had five people that come like right into my face in contact with me for no reason. And no, they weren't trying to start a fight with me, but they just weren't trying. And I actually had to go out of my way to distance myself. So I'm like, and then I hear my friends talking about what's going on in the hospital. They're in the medical industry. I'm like, I think because things started opening back up, I think people thought it was all over, but it's not all over. So got to be safe, you know, just got to be careful. And it's not, I mean, wear a mask and the 6 feet rule. Stick with that for now. I know people are tired too, and I understand. I'm tired. I want to just go back to being Buck Wild again.
Saying, "Hey, bud, let's party,"
and not having to think about what I, you know, not having to think about all this stuff. And people will go madness when this is all over. When this is really over, I mean, it's going to be like people are going to be. You talk about the Roaring Twenties. It's going to be the Roaring Twenties all over again, because people are going to go buck wild.
Oh yeah,
when this is all over, the bars, the clubs, the events are going to be packed. I mean, it's going to be nuts. But right now, you still got to be safe. So you got to think about, I mean, just social distance, and it's not, you know, taking your rights away. It's just being smart. It's just keeping your family and your loved ones safe. I mean, that's all I got to say on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought. I know people are tired of hearing about it too, but that's just what's been weighing on my mind for the last couple of days, is that I was just dumbfounded by how many people were not social distancing. The gatherings I saw driving around at park with 30 people and nobody in a mask. I mean, it's unbelievable. And then you hear about the hospitals being at maximum capacity. So I'm like, we can't mess with that. We can't mess around with that. We got to let the hospitals get their numbers back down. And also those hospital workers got to be getting exhausted and getting tired. That's got to be really difficult. Like, so, you know, we're thinking about them too, and keeping them sustainable, keeping things sustainable for them. So anyway, that's it. Hate to leave us on our final episode of the season on that note, but
no, I definitely echo those sentiments. I 100% agree with everybody needs to do their part. Like, we're in this together, for as cliche as that sounds. Like, we all need to do our part to make sure we're keeping everyone safe. Like, it's not just about yourself as an individual, and just do your part. It's not very hard.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. To kind of break things up a little bit, I'm going to leave everybody with some Michael Keaton sound bites.
Oh, yeah.
From the 89 Batman, from the, you know, his Batman. And it'll be kind of
let's get nuts.
Yeah, let's get nuts. Yeah, and get nuts.
Hi, Bruce Wayne.
Are you sure?
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Cold.
Kill you.
From hell.
Yeah.
How much do you weigh?
About 108, I think.
You weigh a little more than 108.
Oh, really?
Let's go.
Stop. You might not let me kiss you.
You're a real nice girl, and I like you a lot, but for right now, shut up.
Why did you bring me here? Well, you could have sent that stuff to the press yourself.
You're right. There is something else you have that I want.
What? No, you can't do that.
Neither can I.
The Ice Princess...
Look, I tried to avoid all this, but I can't. This is how it is. It's not a perfect world.
Lights out! Now you want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts.
Excuse me. Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight? Don't you see? We're the same. We're the same. Split right down the center. I know who you are. You're not the mayor. You killed my parents.
What?
Huh.
What are you talking about?
I made you. You made me first. Mistletoe can be deadly if you eat it. Alfred, let's go shopping.
Love that. Love that. Love it. Let's get nuts. All right, Johnny, you, sir, be safe.
Yeah, as you as well and your family.
Thank you. Be well, and I hope next time we talk, things are on the upswing. And it, not COVID, but the world and life. And
oh, yeah.
Things getting kind of... sort of back to normal. I hope COVID's going down and everything else is going back up.
And that's the goal.
And I hope movie theaters are back and movies are back. And but if not, we'll kick off next season with talks of VOD and streaming shows and more COVID. So
yeah.
But everyone have a great hour, second, day, millisecond. Good day.
These nuts. Lights out. Now you want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts. These nuts. Lights out. Now you want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts. These nuts.
I lied.
Thunderpop, 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 oh, Thunderpop.
So long! See you later! Beat it! Hit the bricks! Hit the bricks!
And Thunderpop is a Hit the Bricks production.